Good morning, beautiful world. I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this edition of Baseball Barbacast, we are updating the Shohei Ohtani Ipe gambling scandal. And then we are going to preview the American League Central, everybody's favorite division. Is that right?
No, but it's interesting nonetheless. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that the AL Central should be renamed the AL Mid. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if we scrape 86 wins together, maybe we get a banner.
We got a chance. The standards are as low as it gets in this division. But I am excited to talk about it. I know I let off our Shohei Ipe gambling episode yesterday with a joke about how that is what would make me excited to talk about the AL Central. And I want to clarify that joke twofold, okay? The first thing is that I kind of feel bad going down that route because the truth is our whole thing is that we love talking about every team even though some of them are bad, right? So the truth is I am excited to talk about the AL Central. I am excited to talk about some of these teams no matter how mid or actively horrible they are. But the other truth is that last year, as late as like mid-August, this was once again on pace to be the worst division of all time, besting only the record that this division set in 2018. So there is a reason this division gets the jokes that it does, but we are going to do our best to bring some enthusiasm to the party.
But before we get to these teams, we should probably sauce a little update on Ohtani, Ipe, gambling, non-investigation. The reporting that's come out since we recorded, I would say one is it seems more likely than when we talked that Shohei did not know anything based upon the story told about Ipe addressing the team and Shohei's genuine shock about and confusion over what Ipe had said. We know now that the IRS has been called in, is investigating this. And it's only going to get messier. But the biggest news in my mind over the last 24 hours is non-news, and that is MLB continuing to not release a statement or open an investigation. And where I've kind of landed here on Friday morning is even if Shohei ends up being absolved of any wrongdoing, it certainly smells like a story that should be investigated. I would give it another little look under the old microscope. And so I think it is incredibly bizarre that MLB and Rob Manfred have not said anything publicly. Because all they need to say publicly is, we're monitoring the situation. As facts come to light, we will take steps that we feel are necessary. Like, and I understand that's a non-statement, but making that statement at all, acknowledging that this is the biggest story in not just the sport, but the sports, like
right,
that just shows that you live in the real world. And so I think talking to people around the league over the last 24 hours, that is the biggest shock. It's like, why are we not addressing this? Why are we not talking about Bruno?
Yeah, there was a brief like post or a brief like they put an article up on MLB.com to be like, this is a thing that happened. That was on Thursday, I believe. Or on Wednesday, even like Wednesday night. But after that, that has since been either smushed down to the bottom of the homepage or off the homepage. I don't believe there is still anything on Dodgers.com. Like there isn't anything publicly there. Now, to be clear, there's no shortage of investigations going on here, right? And I don't, I'm sure at some point MLB will probably decide they'll throw their hat in the ring for the absolute barrage of investigations that are already taking place. But I agree with you. Like the fact that you haven't publicly acknowledged, like we are aware of the situation and we are at least looking into it, whatever that could mean you're not even looking into it, but at least means, you know, you say, listen, we know this is a big deal and we are taking it seriously. That does feel like something that we should probably have by now.
Yes, we are aware that the face of our sport is connected to an enormous gambling scandal. Yes, we saw that. Yeah, we caught that news that was on our feed. Enough about Ohtani. I'm sure we will be discussing this. I think we'll probably talk about this story again. at some point.
Yeah, yeah, I will say. Although quickly, just on the DH beat, JD Martinez is on the Mets. I guess the Mets, you know, they could have had Ohtani. They could have gotten Ohtani, and then they would have been dealing with this. But instead, they get JD Martinez for $12 million. And this isn't that complicated. They needed more good hitters. And if they were going to try and win this year, at the very least, even if they were going to be short-term deals, and this is a very, very good version of that, I think JD Martinez is still good. So it puts the Mets back closer to having to take them mildly seriously. Of course, the pitching is our big question. But I would say that my only big thought about this is not about JD Martinez and the Mets. It's more about that, and I've said this a few times this offseason, we really had kind of a chalky offseason. I know we had some weird stuff along the way in terms of the contracts, but as far as team fits, if you look at the top 20 free agents, very few of them do you look at them and you say, huh, I'm surprised he landed there. Very, very, very few. And this is the latest of that. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just interesting because we've had more shocking connections in recent years. But this one, this offseason did not give us, like when this happens, when moves like this happen, I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, okay, it's, got it. Yep. Sounds about right.
To stay in the hot parlance, it's a lot of one seeds.
Right. Yeah. So shouts out to, I guess, the Reds and Royals for giving us a few surprises, and the Astros for paying Josh Hader.
A few Cinderella stories mixed in. Before we get to the AL Central, Jordan, the Yahoo Sports world family is doing a bracket pool.
Oh, yes.
Your boy is somehow in second place out of 32 people.
So, you know, that's very funny. But the really weird thing about that is we obviously don't watch college basketball and don't really care about this, but we want to participate and we want to, you know, we're new at Yahoo. We want to be involved, and we appreciate them including us and putting us on the experts graphic.
Hilarious.
Did you see that we both picked Tennessee to win it all separate from each other?
We didn't even talk about this.
We spent 0 seconds, but I looked at everything. Actually, now I'm curious about for the women's, which I guess starts today. But anyway, you're in second place, though. That's great. I don't even know what the prize is. We'll see how long this goes. But I guess we're both rooting for Tennessee.
Yeah, my Final Four is Tennessee, North Carolina, Washington State, and Nebraska. I had to funnel a 7 and an 8 seed in there because I'd like living on the edge. In the women's bracket, Jordan, like, freaking duh, took Iowa. Like, I would say that my
Caitlin, no fun.
Like, we don't talk about other sports, really. My Caitlin Clark appreciation levels are through the roof, and I have a jersey on the way to my house that I bought.
There you go. Internet.
Like, I'm
that.
All
I am just looking though, and it does seem that we are one of only three people to pick. Two of only three people to pick Tennessee to win it all. So if Tennessee gets hot in this tournament, just know that Jake and I will be absolutely flexing on everybody.
Absolutely. Tennessee on the men's side, Iowa on the women's side were my picks. Before we talk about ball, Wright Thompson on Caitlin Clark on ESPN the other day. Go read it if you're listening to this. It's like the ideal of sports writing to me. It is just beautiful stuff and made me tear up at the end. Okay. Enough hoops. Let's talk about the American. This is how much we want to talk about the AL Centrals. We're talking about hoops. Okay. We're going to go, as we always do, from worst to first based upon the projections, the over-unders. The over-unders on, what do we use? BetMGM?
I think we're using BetMGM. Now, just to be clear, BetMGM isn't telling us to do this. We don't.
Oh, yeah. We're not getting money
on betting these,
this
is strictly a podcast. A podcast vehicle.
Yeah. And let's hop in that podcast vehicle and talk about the Chicago White Sox. How'd they do last year?
This team had the rare experience of losing 101 games and not finishing in last place. But boy, were they a rough watch, basically from the get-go, though they still had a lot of famous and sort of good players on paper. It was just an atrocity. And they were horrible, and they traded basically everybody they possibly could away in July and continued to be very, very, very bad. The biggest news from last year is that they finally parted ways with Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn, who had been there forever, and they decided to really bring in a fresh face, Chris Getz, who was their farm director. So there's a lot of still questions about kind of what the White Sox leadership structure is going to be moving forward as far as getting some new ideas in there. But the point is they were very bad. And while Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams were the ones that executed the deals of the deadline, they were immediately ousted in August. And now it is Chris Getz's job to build this disaster up from the bottom.
Congrats, Chris. That's a gig that I would not want. The sense that that we get, okay, let's pivot to what they did over the winter. Everything must go. I mean, they are in, we'll rip it up from the frickin' studs mode, which is, I guess, a good thing. There are no delusions that there are pieces on this roster beyond Luis Robert that could be worthwhile on a good White Sox team in the future. So over the winter, they brought in anyone who grew up near Chicago in trades, Paul DeJong, Nicky Lopez. They traded away Dylan Cease, which is very notable. We talked quite a bit about that. They signed Eric Fetty to a two-year deal from the KBO to be one of their top starters, and not a whole lot else. But my big question for this club, is this the worst team in baseball?
It certainly can be. And, you know, I wrote
if they believe in themselves
preview. Yeah. And that's the thing is we have different objectives here, right? This is one of the teams, honestly, one of the few teams, right? I mean, even when talking about the Rockies, they are delusional enough to think like, yeah, we're going to be all right. The Nationals, same thing, right? The A's are their own category, but the plan for the White Sox is to be bad. And so when we judge this season, it's not just, oh my God, they're horrible. Yeah, yes, that's the point. Right now, I know they're not going to be, if they are the worst team, they're not going to be guaranteed the number one pick. But this is still about, you know, rebuilding and kind of taking steps forward in other parts of the organization that have nothing to do with the standings. And so it absolutely is prepared to be the worst team in baseball. I don't know if they are, because again, they're still in a division that is worse than the other ones. So it is going to be a little bit harder to rack up the L's. But at the same time, this is a pretty solid, really good chance that being the worst.
There's also a good shot that they have the best player in the division, Luis Robert Jr., when the dust settles. I said a good shot. I mean, you could take Bobby Witt Jr., you could take Royce Lewis. There is a good chance Luis Robert Jr. finishes top in WAR in the AL Central, which is a ranking everyone talks about.
That's true. That's possible.
At least for White Sox fans, is a reason to turn on the boob tube and consume White Sox baseball. My key player, though, is Yoan Moncada. Gotta see something here. Like, there's gotta be some sort of progression. Let me expand that. Yoan Moncada and or Eloy Jimenez, because we have passed the point of them being members of the next good White Sox team. Okay. Both have a pretty pricey option at the end of this year. I think it's most likely that both are free agents at the end of this year. But the question is, do the White Sox get anything back from them at the deadline? Can either of them perform to a level that makes them worth trading for from another team? Now, it is incredibly depressing and unfortunate that this is where we have gotten to with the White Sox, that Moncada and Jimenez were supposed to be core cogs in the next contention window for this club. And that window is just so brief, so short, and so fleeting that I am sitting on a podcast now and I'm like, you know what would be great is if these guys were good enough that they could trade them away. Like, time rolls on,
trade them away for anything, right? I mean, as far as we know, like, they were probably trying to get rid of him since last deadline. Because, like you
said,
they
tried this winter. I heard they tried this winter to get rid, like, to trade these guys away, and there just weren't any nibblers. Yeah. So they really need them to show something.
Yes, no, I agree with that. And really, it's not just how hyped they were as prospects. I mean, they had pretty substantially high ceilings that we saw in the big leagues, you know, not too long ago. Like, they've both shown versions of themselves that were good. This isn't guys that we have never seen succeed in the major leagues before. They're guys that we saw and then have just been either injured or fluctuating, and it's just been ugly. My key player, though, is Garrett Crochet. And the reason why I'm landing on Garrett Crochet is The fact that he's opening day starter is shocking for so many reasons. This is someone who I believe has not thrown like four innings in a game since like 2020 in college or 2019 in college. He's been a reliever in the big leagues. He's been hurt a ton. He was hurt a ton last year. But to me, the reason why they went with this is because he is one of their own. You know, it doesn't really, I mean, sure, they bring in Mike Soroka and Fetty and Flexen, but like, to kind of make a statement and say like, Garrett Crochet, we believe in you. You are a homegrown guy that we think can be a starting pitcher. I think this is kind of a more of a symbolic opening day start than you are our best starter. However, the list of left-handed pitchers that can throw as hard as Garrett Crochet, who looked pretty damn good in spring training, is very short. And so he is the kind of talent on the mound with, again, I wouldn't necessarily bank on it, but there is talent here that if they're right about him, then that is an actual piece that they can build around, a 24-year-old left-handed starter. So I'm just fascinated to see him, and the fact that we're going to already see him on opening day is pretty wild. All right, what makes us laugh about the White Sox? Andrew Benintendi is still on this team. I know we were saying, what can they do to trade the veterans? Probably not going to be able to trade the remaining $60 million on this contract. This was the largest free agent contract they had ever given anybody. And for that to be Andrew Benintendi, who promptly had an 87 OPS plus across a full season, he played basically the whole year. He wasn't hurt. He hits 5 home runs. He is just about the most average, not even really average, I should say. He's just nothing. Now, this contract is not like an abomination in terms of how much he's making, but in the context of it's a reminder of where they were a year ago, which was, we are trying to win. And now it's, we are trying to lose. And Andrew Benintendi is still there. And that's kind of funny.
Just like a bizarre fit. Just the weirdest fit.
Yeah.
Over under on this team is 60.5. Jordan Schusterman, what say you?
I am taking the under, and the reason it is such a low number, but again, with the plan to be to lose, I do think the worst team in baseball will have in the 50s of wins. And so in that sense, I'm going to take the under here. Maybe this is horribly disrespectful, but based on the White Sox fans we know and talk to, I think they probably agree with us.
I think I would take the under on 55. I think this team is going to be a train wreck.
Yeah. I just realized did we even do the whole lineup? I don't even think we did.
No, we didn't. I could do it quickly if you really want to. Sure. All right. Behind the dish, Martin Maldonado.
Andrew, we're excited about that. But yeah. So
Andrew Vaughn at first, Nicky Lopez at second, Johan Moncada at third, Paul DeJong at short, Benintendi, Luis Robert, and Dominic Fletcher.
Yeah, baby.
Jimenez at DH. Rotation is Eric Fetty, Mike Soroka, Chris Flexen, Garrett Crochet, and yo mama. And then the bullpen is Stephen Wilson, John Brebbia, and Michael Kopech.
All right. I just want to, again, we try to be consistent here. Let's talk about the Royals.
Wait, quickly. But the biggest loss for them over the offseason is this organization is such a catastrophe that Jason Benetti went to the Tigers as their broadcaster.
True.
They lost the guy who's from Chicago, grew up a White Sox fan, was like, we love Jason, buddy. He was like, nah, I'm going to go do somewhere else. Thanks.
Well, I was going to say, I still think that's the biggest addition the Tigers made. We'll get to them in a little bit. The Kansas City Royals. Oh, my God. They were so bad last year. But I'm wearing my Burlington Royals hat. RIP, the Burlington Royals as a Royals affiliate. A lot of players on this team actually played on that last Burlington Royals team in 2019. Vinny was on that team. Michael Garcia was on that team. Michael Massey. Angel Zerpa was on the Burlington Royals. But anyway, last year, they sucked so much. Oh, my God, were they bad. Now, were they expecting to be good? No. But to lose 106 games, which tied a franchise record, and this is a team that has lost a lot over the last few decades, except for that time when they won the World Series, 106 is so many losses.
It's so many losses, and still a couple things went right despite that. They got another huge leap forward from Bobby Witt Jr., who certainly looks like one of the best players in the league. And they pulled off the heist of the century, sending Aroldis Chapman to the Texas Rangers in exchange for Cole Ragans, who made 12 starts in which he struck out 89 hitters in 71 innings, had a 168 ERA plus, and looked like one of the best pitchers in baseball, like right away. Besides that, a very little to
bad
feel
season.
Good about.
Really, really bad season. And they knew it was a bad season. And so this winter they said, you know what? Let's do something about it. Let's get some guys that we can pay to actually record outs that are not named Cole Ragans. And that was Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, who they bring in on multi-year contracts. They bring in some veterans for the bullpen, Will Smith, Chris Stratton. By the way, Jordan Lyles bumped to the bullpen. Jordan Lyles has lost his rotation spot. So that's how you know the Royals are serious.
I was going to say, can he throw a complete game coming out of the pen? Like, let's say they, you know.
How can he munch those innings out of the bullpen?
It's easy. Pitcher doesn't get an out in the first. You bring in Lyles and he just finishes a game for you.
Very, very possible. Can you
get a complete game and a game, like a complete game? Would that count if you complete
the game?
And a game
finished?
And a game finished, yeah. You get 27. If the starter doesn't get an out and you get 27 outs, is that a complete game?
I don't think so.
Should be.
Because you didn't face every batter. It should be.
But you complete the game.
Yeah, but the game. This is good. People who know understand scoring. I don't think so because you didn't face every batter of the other team. But I like this. I like where your head's at. So they make some additions to the pitching staff that I kind of like. And then they add also, I mean, this whole team needed help. So it's not surprising that they needed to get some batters as well. But the ways they went to do that were interesting. Hunter Renfroe, Adam Frazier, Garrett Hampson. Okay, interesting. Now, again, this offense stunk, but it was kind of a strange three to go for based on the seasons they were coming off of. Now, that said, here is the lineup. Here are the Kansas City Royals. Behind the dish, Salvador Perez, one of my favorite players in baseball. I adore this guy, and I'm so glad that he is still the Royals catcher. First base, Vinny Pasquantino, former and future podcast guest. Second base, he's back from shoulder surgery. Love you, Vinny. Second base, Michael Massey. Third base, Michael Garcia. The shortstop, of course, Bobby Witt Jr. Outfield, MJ Melendez, who is done catching officially. So that's over.
Congrats to MJ.
Now he can focus on getting his OBP, you know, over 300. But he hits the ball really hard. So good luck to MJ on that. Kyle Isbell, fantastic defender, can't really hit. Hunter Renfroe, atrocious on his teams in the second half last year, but, you know, decent track record of power. Nick Prado, another one of their homegrown guys, you know, projected to be the DH. He's kind of had an interesting last couple seasons. The rotation, Ragans, Randy Johnson, Gen Z Randy Johnson. Is he Gen Z? Probably close. Gen Z Randy Johnson, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, Brady Singer, Jordan Lyles, maybe. Chris Bubich is hurt, so it looks like it's going to be Alec Marsh as the five starter. The bullpen, James MacArthur, who throws really hard. John McMillan also in that mix. Will Smith, John Schreiber, who they traded for. That's another reliever they got. Carlos Hernandez somehow still there. What is your one big question for the Royals?
Is this second level of hitters good enough for this team to win baseball games? Because I feel pretty good about Vinny, call me biased. I feel pretty good about Salvi being solid at worst. And Bobby Witt Jr. is going to get MVP votes, right? We know those things. But that next wave of young hitters, Michael Massey, Michael Garcia, MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, if the Royals have any hope of being competitive in the next half decade, that contingent needs to be at least everyday players. And besides Garcia, we haven't seen a whole lot of evidence that that's the case. Yeah. And in my opinion, the key player here is Melendez, because if when he came up, it was amazing batted ball exit velocities from a catcher. Wow. And what it's become is mediocre corner outfield defender who gets on base once a week. And so it's like, that's not a viable player. However, the raw juice is very much still in there. And so if they can develop him enough where he's anything for them, that is a sign that this organization is at least moving in the right direction and getting the most out of their young players at the big league level.
Yeah, and the reason why it's really so important is, you know, there are some other teams where it's like, all right, let's see what we have here. If they're not very good, you know, we got another wave coming. This farm system is very bad. And while they do have some guys at the top, at the upper levels who we start to see the big leagues, like Nick Lofton, Tyler Gentry, okay, we'll see what we have. Nelson Velasquez, who they traded for, like, it's not like they got a top 30 prospect on the way, you know, another Bobby Witt Jr. type or even mm-hmm. anything close to that. So they're kind of, you know, pot committed with these guys, and all their talent in the minors is really at the lower levels. So there's not help imminently coming. So if they are planning to win this year, I totally agree. However, my key player is Brady Singer. This is someone who I think we were both like really excited about a year ago. Remember, he was on Team USA. He had kind of a mini breakout in 2022. We really liked the sinker. We liked he looked like a workhorse. He made 29 starts last year and he just stunk. He was just getting smashed. And basically the sinker was not effective. His slider was way worse than it was in 2022. And he, like most of the Royals pitchers that weren't named Cole Reagans, was just getting destroyed. I don't think he's that bad. Maybe he's not as good as in 22. But the fact that now he's the four starter and not the one starter means there's less pressure. But if he can be good and those other guys can also be good, like this rotation isn't bad. But he is a very big part of that because that drop off after the top three could still be really, really, really steep.
What makes us laugh? Vinny Pasquantino. We've mentioned this theory before. There are the bar to be a funny baseball player is way lower than being a funny human being. And that's okay. Yeah. A lot of baseball players who we say, that guy's so funny, they're the fourth funniest human in your friend group. Okay. But Vinny is legitimately hilarious. And not just saying that because he's our friend, but maybe he is also our friend because he's so funny. Everything he does makes me laugh. The interview he did in the dugout where Bobby Witt Jr. was, do you see this? Where Bobby Witt Jr. was throwing stuff at him the other day.
No, I didn't on the broadcast. See this.
Oh my God. He was like doing an in-game interview and he goes, there are two people in Kansas City you don't fight. Patrick Mahomes, Bobby Witt Jr. But I will do it right here on the broadcast if I have to. And I was like, heck yeah.
Vinny. Also, there's some baseball players that are funny on Twitter but not funny in real life. Vinny is also both. Vinny, we love you. We hope you stay healthy and we hope you have a 450 on base percentage. Over under 73.5. I'll take the over. I don't think this team's going to actually be good, but 73.5 is a pretty low number. So what do you think?
I'm going to take the under on that. I have very little faith in the position player group.
Yeah.
After Pasquantino, Garcia, Witt, Perez.
Yeah.
Like we just have not seen it. We've seen some Michael Massey stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think Renfro has it anymore. Giving him 2 years was kind of a wild move.
I know.
I don't think there's organizational depth here for when people get hurt. I don't think it's a 56 win team or whatever. I think it's, you know, a 68-70 win team, but that's the under. And so I will take the under on the Royals. And the good times roll on here in the AL Central, but the Cleveland Guardians, how did they do last season? I think they maybe win the award as the most forgettable ball club of 2023. Congrats, raise the banner.
I think that's a fair assessment. However, they were in first place in July, which I had no recollection of whatsoever. They had a million injuries, but again, that kind of goes to show you what this division is all about. But my gosh, they were very, very, very bad down the stretch. This team, I believe, went 11-16 in August, 12-15 in September. Completely fell out of the postseason mix, the AL Central mix, which are two different things. We should clarify. Now, what did they do this offseason? Absolutely nothing. This team gave money to Austin Hedges to come back to be their backup catcher hype man to help Bo Naylor. And other than that, they made some trades. So I guess they took a Rule 5 pick. They traded for Scott Barlow. But otherwise, this was one of the quietest off seasons of any, I mean, maybe the quietest offseason. It was definitely a top five quiet offseason. And considering, I guess, the trade for Estevan Florial, considering where they were last year, where it was like, okay, let's take steps. Let's do something about it, right?
Yeah.
They seem to trust what they have internally. And I think that it's fair. That is a fair strategy, but it is still always frustrating to see teams spend this little.
For instance, I think the Guardians not signing JD Martinez is an abomination. This offense doesn't hit home runs, needs another right-handed power bat, does not have an obvious designated hitter, and JD Martinez just signed. Like, just a prime example of the type of player this team needs. And I think they are doing a disservice to the fan base and to the players currently on the roster by not pushing the chips in a little bit more. We have seen ebbs and flows of teams that don't spend enough money. And I think that the Reds, right? The Reds are no longer 30 out of 30 for deserving our scorn for being cheap. They're not. I think the Guardians offseason was the most unforgivably frugal winter that we had in baseball. Because this team has pieces on it that they should win the division. This team could have been the favorite to win the division if they had spent money, like the Royals did, or even like the Tigers did. But instead, they rested on their laurels, and I think it will hurt them in the long run. But who is on this team? Behind the dish, Bo Naylor, who I think freaking rules. He will split time with Austin Hedges, who I think is a fun guy, but maybe not Babe Ruth. First base, Bo's brother Josh. Second base, Andrés Giménez. Third base, Jose Ramirez. An absolute delight. Shortstop is going to be, I think, Brian Rocchio to start the season. We'll see some Tyler Freeman there. We'll see some Gabriel Arias there. The outfield, which might hit 11 combined home runs, is Stephen Kwan in left, Miles Straw in center, and Ramon Laureano, who feels 35 but is 29. He is in right field, and the designated hitter is going to be Estevan Florial, Gabriel Arias, Kyle Manzardo eventually. He didn't make the team out of camp.
De Los Santos, baby.
Now, I will say, if all that sounds bleak, this rotation, pretty good. Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, Gavin Williams. Sounds pretty nails to me. And the bullpen, Manuel Clase, Scott Barlow, and Sam Hinches will lead that group. But the question, as is always the case with the Guardians, is this enough offense?
We've been wondering this about this team for, unfortunately, quite some time now. The degree to which they have leaned in to contact and defense and base running is commendable to some degree, right? It's like, oh yeah, we're going to do it our way. Like, this is, we can win like this. And, you know, they did win 92 games 2 years ago, but at some point you got to hit the ball over the outfielders' heads. And we still are not looking at a whole lot of guys on this team that can do that.
I really want to properly convey this to the listeners. Okay. If you look at a chart, a graph of all of the teams by home runs last year, on one end, you have the Braves at 307, which is nuts. The Dodgers were second with 249. Okay, that's an enormous gap, right?
Yeah.
But on the other end, the Guards were 30 out of 30 with 124 home runs. 29 was the Nats with 151. Okay, so they were 25 home runs behind, like below 29th. It's not just, oh, this is a lineup who doesn't hit the ball over the fence. This is a strategy and a plan of attack. You don't end up with 124 home runs, 25 fewer than the next team, if it's not an approach that you are teaching and building your roster around, right? And so I think that there are reasons for that. I think if the game skews back towards a contact-heavy approach and we get fewer home runs over the next 3 years, the Guardians might end up looking pretty smart. But we are living in the real world here, and 124 home runs is not going to win you a division.
Agreed. And also, there's some great reporting from Zach Mizell of The Athletic this offseason about how they have acknowledged this. And while they clearly didn't change anything on the roster about it, although some of the, you know, the Rule 5 pick, Davis, Cedillo, Santos, Floreal, these are guys with bigger raw power. They do have some interesting minor league hitters that we could see this year. Chase DeLauder, Kyle Manzardo, who could maybe bring a little bit more pop. But they acknowledged it as an organizational weakness and basically told their hitters, like, you got to be more comfortable swinging and missing. And so there's this great kind of excerpt that he has talking about Stephen Kwan, like, trying to swing and miss. And so that he's more comfortable taking massive hacks at the right pitches as opposed to, let me put this terrible pitch in play. Because at some point, you have to actively do damage, and the Guardians have not done enough of that.
That, what you just talked about, is what the Orioles organization is elite at teaching, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. so people understand. Mm-hmm. It is not being passive. It is not even plate discipline. It is being the right level of aggressive at certain pitches in certain counts.
However, the personnel is still the personnel. And even if they are able to, you know, unlock some stuff with Kwan and, okay, now we get Miles Straw to 5 homers and we get Josh Naylor to 12, this is still the group that they have. And the way they're going to win is by being one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. And that is possible.
And part of the way that happens is Bo Naylor becoming a dude behind the plate. From a defensive perspective, Cleveland during this recent run of contention has really prioritized catcher defense. Think about how many years they ran Roberto Perez out there, right, to carry the staff when he was hitting with a pool noodle. Naylor offers a lot more upside on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, he had a 124 OPS plus. Granted, it was a smallish sample size, but this is a guy who can really hit. He is uber athletic. The play he made where he did the spin move throw to second base is a thing that I don't think any other catcher in baseball can do physically. And his framing metrics graded out pretty well. I think he needs to improve the consistency of his throws down a second. But if he's an above average bat, like, he is a real piece moving forward for this team. I am really excited about Bo Naylor.
Yeah, and he was my key player when I you know, wrote the preview. But I'll just to add a different one. Like, I've already talked about him on here, but I just think McKenzie is just such a big part of this. He's looked great. Him and Bieber, again, they just were not themselves or pitching last year at all. And their decision, Cleveland's decision to hang on to Bieber in particular, is one that says, yeah, we believe he's thrown harder than he has in years. And it's true. Like, that, those are two massive pieces that could absolutely put them back in the mix for this division, even if this offense continues, you know, to slug 300. So I just think both of those guys, while we know all about them, we were probably underestimating how important they could be if they are both healthy.
What makes me laugh? This team continues to have the energy of the parents are out and the kids are running the show.
Yeah.
Especially now that their manager is Stephen Vogt, who is not yet 40 years old. Yep. They have two everyday players above 30, or say one everyday player above 30. That's Jose Ramirez. Austin Hedges is 31, mm-hmm. and Ramon Laureano is 29, and like everyone else is a freaking child. Yeah. Like, this is a young, young team. And now that it's not, you know, Uncle Terry Francona pulling the strings, I mean, fascinated how this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Tito is like some grumpy old guy. I mean, no. Tito embodied that too. But now you actually have someone, of course, his first year managing. So I agree. That is very funny. All right, over under 79.5 for the Guardians. I'm going to go over here. I am going to go over. I don't feel great about them like actually making it, but I think they will be relevant for way longer in this season than last year. I really think they're going to stay in the mix.
I agree with you. I will also take the over. Despite everything I said about the offense, Kwan Jimenez Ramirez nailer is solid enough to score enough runs that I think this pitching staff is really going to cook. If they stay healthy, it's one of the best five rotations in the league. And I think that just gives them a really high floor. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I do think this team will be better than last year. And at the very least, more interesting than a year ago. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll talk about the juggernauts of this division. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, the American League Central preview. I'm honestly just surprised this division hasn't been sucked up by conference realignment yet. You know, the Royals haven't gone to the Mountain West and the Tigers haven't joined the Big Ten. And you know, that's surprising to me.
No one wants them. That's the problem. No one's lobbying. The Sun Belt's not like we need the Royals ASAP. But maybe they should. All right, two teams left. Let's talk about the Tigers of Detroit. Now, let's remember the Tigers of Detroit, Jake Mintz, they finished in second place last year. This is a second place team, 78-84 in 2023.
You know who else was a second place team last year? The Diamondbacks and the Phillies.
And the Rangers.
And the Rangers, who won the World Series.
Tigers, just like them, 78-84. And then, again, what does the 78-84 team do? They say, oh, we don't suck. Let's do something to make sure that we suck even less next year. What do? They trade for Mark Canna immediately. I believe that was like the first move of the entire winter. And still one of my favorites, I should say. Love Mark Canna. They sign Jack Flaherty and Kent Maeda for the rotation. And they also add Shelby Miller in the bullpen, who was quietly unbelievable for the Dodgers last year. Andrew Chafin comes back to the Tigers as well. And they, Gio Urshela, who I also think doesn't stink. I'm in on Gio Urshela. And they give a big extension to one of their top prospects, Colt Keith, who is going to be their opening day second baseman. Who is on the Tigers, Jake?
Well, before we say who's on the Tigers, it's worth noting that when you take a look at the Tigers and Royals last season, right? These two teams, we had them kind of grouped together heading into 2023. It was like, what are we going to see, right? Are they going to show us something about the next wave? And for all what the Royals didn't do, the Tigers did do that. There were things to like, there were things to be positive and optimistic about. It feels like this organization is moving in the right direction. Will they win the division this year? I don't think so, but I like where they're headed and who is taking them there. Behind the dish, Jake Rogers, defense first catcher. He's going to platoon or split time with Carson Kelly, who's on this team. First base, Spencer Torkelson, the big stick. Second base, I guess, is Zach McKinstry.
Colt Keith. I mean, Zach McKinstry's going to play a lot, but Colt Keith, I mean, they didn't give him all that money to hang out on the bench.
That's true.
Yeah.
You're right. I guess I put this in before the extension. Colt Keith, second base. Shortstop, Javier Baez. We will talk about him in a second. Gio Urshela at third. I think we will see some Matt Vierling there at some points. He played a bit there last year. In the outfield, it'll be Parker Meadows in center, Riley Green in right, and Mark Canna in left. Vierling, I think, will also get time in center against left-handed pitchers because Parker Meadows is a righty. And then Kerry Carpenter, who's super underrated, he's going to designate a hit because of the Miguel Cabrera era. The Miguel Cabrera era is over. The rotation is what people are excited about, though. Tarik Skubal, who is everyone under the sun's dark horse AL Cy Young pick, he's going to lead the line. Jack Flaherty, Kenta Maeda, Matt Manning, Reese Olson. There's a whole lot of depth here, though, too, as you dig deeper into the organization. Casey Mize will certainly be back up at some point. He looks healthy. I don't know if he's starting the year in the rotation, but he's going to spend the bulk of the season, obviously, with the big league club. Jackson Jobe, I think we will see at some point, top pitching prospect for the Tigers. He's looked really good for them. He's still only 21 years old. The arms are definitely encouraging. And then in the bullpen, Alex Lang, Jason Foley, Andrew Chafin, Tyler Holton. There's a lot to like here in terms of the out gathering.
Yeah.
One big question.
Yeah.
Are the Tigers interesting or good?
Hmm. Yeah, and so when I wrote about them for the preview, I'm kind of jumping ahead to like season prediction, but I see them as a team that we are going to feel very good about at the end of the season, but not a team that is in the playoffs or that close. Like, I think if when after the Diamondbacks run, it's very easy to jump ahead. It's like, who's this year's Diamondbacks? And the Tigers check a lot of those boxes. They really check a lot of those boxes. And I do think they are the best pick if you are going to pick a team like that. I just think that there are still too many questions on offense. The reason this team was so competent last year, as far as I can tell, is the bullpen was sneaky amazing. Like, amazing. Lang, Holt, and Foley were just nails for much of the season. I know, Lang walks a ton of guys, but his stuff is legit. Like, those guys were really good. And now, Will Vest was also really solid. Like, it gets better now you bring in Shelby Miller and Chafin. So that group is in place. But the offensive numbers here, I know we saw Kerry Carpenter, it was still pretty bad. And I know that you brought in some veterans to maybe change that, which is good. And maybe you get a full season of Scooble. I think they're still closer to interesting than good. But I don't know. I know people don't like him, and that's fair. But I do think AJ Hinch is one of the best managers in the league. And I think that he plays a huge part in player development as well. And so I think that he could help that in some respect too. Maybe I don't want to overrate too much because I want to be consistent in my, I want to clarify my manager stance. Managers are important. I get that. I don't see that. But as far as like projecting the season, I am not as focused on it for the regular season as it is for the postseason. But in Hinch's case, with his track record and his background, I do think that he can make a difference there. So I don't know. I'm closer to interesting than good, but I don't know. Where do you land?
I think they're going to be solid. I kind of agree with you. I think they're definitely compelling, but I don't think this team could win a World Series right now. Can't wait for that to get clips when they win the World Series. Andy Ibañez, by the way, was like sneaky incredible over the second half last year. That's another guy I think we should definitely mention. And then Torkelson and Green, I mean, let's get to the key players. Like, those are the guys. Like, those guys have to cook, right? If you Torkelson and Green are like the all-star hitters on the Tigers, right? And they both have the talent. It's can they take a half step up? And can they do it over a full season?
Yeah, I agree. And the best case scenario, right, is them just, reaching their potential already. And they both showed versions of themselves that are, I think Green is the safer bet, but I still think I am not out on Torque at all. I know some people treat him like he's some disappointment, but he's still hitting the ball as hard as most people. And he gave you 31 homers hitting it, playing in Detroit. Like, let's be a little bit more patient with Torque.
And not just 31 homers playing in Detroit. I mean, if you do last 4 months of the year, okay, he's one of the best home run hitters in baseball. He's eighth if you go June 1st to the end of the year. Mm-hmm. This is Matt Olson, Schwarber, Acuna, Ozuna, Otani, Seager, Riley, Torque, Betts, Alonso, Machado, Juan Soto. And that's, like you said, playing in a really difficult hitter's park. So I think that he can really hit the ball over the fence.
Yeah. Now, I will say there are a lot of young players to choose from as key players, but my key player is Jack Flaherty. I think that for him to be, I love Kenta Maeda, and even though he's older and maybe the upside is more limited, like, Flaherty is someone we are now 5 years removed from him being a legitimately good starter. He has to be better. I know it's not like, sure, no such thing as a bad one-year deal. He has to be better than what he was last year if the Tigers want to have any chance. And I'm saying even better than what he was in St. Louis before the trade, because he was obviously terrible with the Orioles, right? He's 28. I guess we've been low on him for a while, but that's just a reaction to the performance and the injuries, right? And so this is a pretty significant commitment to say, hey, you're going to be our two, or at least our three. And I'm very curious to see if they're right about him, because he could certainly get them back to closer to a strong rotation. I know they have depth behind him, but that's still a pretty big commitment in a very similar way that we talked about Frankie Montas for the Reds.
Yeah. Something that makes us laugh. Let's do something that makes us sad. And that's Javi Baez, because he played last year, man.
He's been posting. He's been showing up to work.
Posted. I mean, he played 136 games and he slashed 222, 267 OBP, 325 slug. He hit 9 home runs the entire year. Now, thankfully, his defense is still beautiful and elite and phenomenal to watch and very valuable, right? But as a hitter, oh my God. I mentioned I was maybe irresponsible with my Christian Yelich.
No,
Chris
I was
Davis
about
comp,
to bring this up. Yeah.
But this is
now again, the obvious one. Difference, the obvious difference is that he is still one of the best infield defenders in the world, right? So that's not something that Yelich or Davis could say, whatever. But as far as like, oh my gosh, like, because remember, the first year was bad. And it was like, oh God, you know. But not what it was in 23, right? And so I don't know how he gets out of this. I don't know when they decide, we don't care how much you're paying you. We have better players. You cannot play anymore. I don't know what that looks like. Like, I guess you can just, you know, treat him like he's Andrelton Simmons, right? Where it's like, eh, whatever. He's still a plus shortstop, and I literally do not care what he's doing on offense. But it is, you know, he's making $25 million the next three seasons. And he's good. Next 4 seasons. And so, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what that looks like. But it is a bummer. I agree.
The Davis-ness of it is also the way his at-bats go.
Yeah.
Where it feels like there are some at-bats that are over before they start.
Yep.
And he gives at-bats away. He had all the good quotes about being rejuvenated and ready to go this spring. And he's looked similarly horrible at the plate in camp. But what's also bizarre about him is, like, on a physical level, he is not, like, his sprint speed is still really high. Like, he still feels
that's the thing.
Like an elite athlete. Like, he hasn't declined physically. And so as much, now maybe the bat speed and the hand speed has gone downhill a little bit. Yeah. But like, if the Tigers are going to have to eventually make a difficult decision about him. Just because of how many more years they have him for.
Yeah. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know who is necessarily, because the thing is that their farm system is full of guys that can hit but can't play defense, which is so, so ironic, right? So in some ways, Javi Baez might be able to just hang out and play a mean shortstop and hit eighth because the rest of the lineup is good enough where you can just ignore that. But he's still, you know, he's still Javi Baez. He's still one of the most recognizable faces, you know, on this roster. And it is a strange thing. 81.5. I am going under slightly. They won 78 last year. And so I totally understand being like, oh, they could get 4 wins better than that. That's how hard could that be? I just think there are still enough questions on the offensive side, on both sides of the ball. Really, really. It's just, to me, you could say, oh, well, last year was the year before. No, I think this is the year before the year. I think we're going to be feeling really good about the Tigers going into next year. I just don't think we quite know enough yet for me to think they, like, I still have them third. I feel better about Cleveland.
I agree with you. It feels silly to be like, they're going to be behind Cleveland because Detroit doesn't have enough offensive upside, which is, you know. But you know what Cleveland has? Jose Ramirez.
Yep. Yeah. Like, yep. When you have one of the 10, 15 best players in the world, he is, yes, well said. All right. We have one more team, Jake. It's the Twins of Minnesota. They won the division. Not just the division. They won a playoff game. Playoff games, plural. Oh, my gosh. Didn't know that was allowed. But then, instead of riding that momentum into a splashy offseason, they also did very little. They were closer to Cleveland than Detroit and Kansas City in terms of offseason additions. In fact, you could say they actually subtracted some on purpose, some not. But this team is going to look a little bit different. Sonny Gray, Kenta Maeda leaving free agency. They trade Jorge Polanco, their longest tenured player. They trade him to the Mariners for some prospects and for reliever Justin Topa. They sign Carlos Santana, who is one of our favorite baseball players. He is great. They trade for Manny Margot, which is a little interesting. They trade away Nick Gordon for reliever Steven Okert. And I think that is about it. But
I believe, didn't they get Anthony DeSclafani in?
They did, but he is injured now. So I don't know how relevant he is going to be. But now we are still talking about them last because they are still comfortably projected to be the best team in this division. And why is that, Jake? Who is on the Minnesota Twins?
This team bangs. Spoilers, I'm so high on them. Behind the dish, Ryan Jeffers and Christian Vasquez. Jeffers was one of the best catchers in baseball last year, I guess. Like, he was like a 3.5 win player.
Well, right. And how much they play him is going to be really interesting because Vasquez's offense is kind of done.
Yeah, I would say very done. But like, Ryan Jeffers, at least offensively, like, this guy banged.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Like, he raked. First base, at least to start the year, is going to be Carlos Santana, who is an absolute and utter delight. I expect to see some Alex Kirilloff there as well. Second base, Edouard Julian, one of my favorite players in baseball. I have been on the Edouard Julian choo-choo train for some time now, and it felt good to see that train roll into the station in 2023 in his rookie season. He is a bad defender. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, but the guy can really hit. Third base, Royce Lewis, just wow. Awesome. Like,
wow.
Good what for him. What a player. What a player. Like, this guy went through the darkness, 2 ACL surgeries, missed so much time, and to see him emerge with his athleticism still intact, right? Largely.
I mean
he's not a shortstop anymore. He's kind of bigger than what we expected, but at the plate in the box, I mean, he looked legit last year. Shortstop Carlos Correa, right field Max Kepler, center field Byron Buxton.
Uh-huh. He's back, left baby. Field, he found his glove.
Back out there. Oh, that's, I left my glove in the car. Couldn't find it. That's where it was. Left field Matt Wallner. Starting rotation, Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Chris Paddock, Louis Varland, maybe DeSclafani at some point. And the bullpen will be John Duran, who, how does anyone hit him? Griffin Jacks, the pilot, and Brock Stewart. My big question about this team is, are they going to rue being so passive in the offseason? Will that come back to bite them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of my concern. I'm still picking them to win, but I am that kind of combined with you're putting a lot of stock in. I love Bailey Ober so much, but Ober and not as much Ober, but Paddock and Varland. I mean, this team had one of the best rotations in baseball last year because Sonny Gray had a borderline career season and Pablo Lopez broke out. We are full Pablo Lopez believers. Joe Ryan is still a bit of a mystery box, but this starting rotation. I guess what's going to have to happen this year to me is the offense is going to have to be healthier and more consistent, because when your three best players are Byron Buxton, Carlos Correa, and Royce Lewis, I wrote like for the best and worst case scenario, I was like, best case scenario, they combine for 400 games. Worst case scenario, they combine for like under 200 games, right? But there's enough other pieces here that the offense can be decent anyway. But it's just such a gigantic variance in terms of the this lineup being like pretty good and like solid, good enough, especially in this division, right? Where the standards for offense are so low, the standards for offense in this division, right? But they could be light years ahead of everybody else if enough goes right, enough guys stay healthy. Would I actually count on that at this point? Probably not, but I sure do want to.
They had the top three rookies by WRC Plus last year in Wallner, Lewis, and Julian. And I think that's kind of nuts.
I know. Right? I know.
And they're that's like a third of your lineup.
On one hand, it's like, oh, that's an amazing core. On the other hand, it's like, are they really doing that again? I guess we'll see.
Right. But where I fall on this team, and the key player here, is they dog walked this division with their two best players, in theory, Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton, being totally ass, right? And not playing. And when they played, they were not good and being hurt. I could envision a world, maybe I'm being too optimistic, where one of them is just Carlos Correa or Byron Buxton again for a long stretch of the season. And that just takes this team to another level that they didn't have last year. I think, though, the key player is going to be the medical staff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, honestly, right? I mean, the training staff, because Correa's is you know, the one I wrote for the preview, like, because to your point, on one hand, you say, oh, well, they won the division and he stunk, so they can do it. On the other hand, I'm like, I ain't betting on that again. I mean, I guess you can because they, this division is still so weak, but like, dude, we got it. I know. And the other thing is he kind of made us forget about it because he looked so good in those playoff games.
Yeah.
But like, he was just a bad hitter and I don't know what that was about. I'm more bullish on Correa than I think Buxton in terms of overall. Like, I think I feel better about him getting back to a closer version to his best self than Buxton. I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, Correa for me is absolutely the key.
What makes me laugh? How nice this team is. Minnesota nice. Like, the combo of Royce Lewis and Pablo Lopez.
Oh, my gosh.
The two nicest major leaguers I've ever met.
I just say, like, the Twins, when the Twins came to Cincinnati last year, talking to those two guys on the same day just had me in a good mood for like four days after that. And it was so cool to see Lewis have those moments, to see both of them. You know, a lot of bad people get rewarded in our line of work often. But to see Royce Lewis and Pablo Lopez become national stars on the postseason stage last year was so delightful, especially for the bald community. Two bald legends. And they, you know, they're not hiding it. So I love both those guys. And, you know, the over under is 86.5. I'm taking the over for sure. I have some worries, and to your point, like I it was disappointing. I know they were one of the main teams saying, oh, we have no money, the TV. Sorry guys, we got nothing. This is the best we can do. That's disappointing. But there's still a lot of good players on this team. And I trust Rocco. I like the infrastructure. I think they're going to be good.
Yeah, I think they're going to get more out of the rotation than meets the eye. I'm high on Paddock. I know he also like injury risks there, but he's looked good in camp. They're high on him. I picked this team to lose in the World Series, I did that like on the Yahoo, you know, preview. I probably don't believe that. That was just like a little fun. Like, yeah. Previews and predictions are stupid. We don't know. We have no idea. If we really wanted to do it, you would pick the two teams with the highest projected win total. Right, I would take, you know, the Braves and the Orioles and be like, well, here you go. I guess by doing that, I'm saying, like, I think this team is better than people think. Yep. I think the Royals and the Tigers and their fun off seasons are kind of tricking people a little bit. It's good that they were aggressive, those teams. But I think that the Twins, after the dust settles, despite being so embarrassingly passive in the winter, are far and away the best club of this group.
Yep. And by the way, that is a good segue as we go into the weekend. Next week, the season actually begins. We will be doing here are our picks, because I know we sort of threw them out there along the way with these division previews, but we'll try and do picks just because people like that, even though we don't. And then we'll have an opening day preview on Wednesday. And, you know, if we have more Ohtani Ipe news, we will cover that as we see fit. But we did it. We previewed all 30 Major League Baseball teams. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed. On Sunday, we have our fantasy draft, the Baseball Barbacast Fantasy Draft Sunday night. So I'm sure we'll talk about that on Monday as well. Very excited for that. For our 16-team three-catcher league, I cannot wait. Will Christian Vasquez get drafted?
Oh, my, no.
Yes. If remember, we have plate appearances as a category, so he's still going to play. Anyway, that's it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hart's the producer, for making this happen. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and we will talk to you all very soon.
Cheers.